Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Farhat J. Lakhvani, Head of Academic Technology Services at Carnegie Mellon University, Dan McCarrier, Director of Network and Production Services at Carnegie Mellon University, and Pomona Valera, Media Technology Services Manager at Carnegie Mellon University. The session is entitled, Laying the Foundation for Innovative, Flexible, and Consistent Classroom Technology.
My name is Dave Antonacci. I'm the convener of this session. I'm also director of Teaching and Learning Technologies at the University of Kansas Medical Center. I'm looking forward to today's presentation. If you're like us, we started our classroom technology very one-off, lots of differences, tried to standardize, still are trying to standardize, and so looking forward to their experiences, the speaker's experiences doing that also. We have three speakers. Meena Lakhvani is Director of Academic Technology Services. I understand they have changed some titles, so I hopefully have all those correct. Dan McCarrier is Director of Network and Production Services, also at Carnegie Mellon University. And Pomona Valero is the Media Technology Services Manager, and Pomona is the one with the Halloween cat ears on. So, thank you.
I want to start the timer. Happy Halloween and welcome to this session. Can you hear me well? Okay. We are going to give you an overview of this multi-year project that we did, and we just finished, in fact, in 2008, and give you all, you know, how we went around it and what we the approach that we took. So the agenda for today is to really give you a little bit of the background and history of this project and how we went around it, and the faculty advisory committee that was quite instrumental in helping us in with some of the decisions. And I'll touch base on the initial design and the funding, how we secured the funding. And then my colleague, Dan McCarrier, will take over and talk about the technology selection and the planning aspect of it. So we will go into the details of that so that you can have some depth on how this whole process was selected and design work that happened. And after that, Pomona will do the implementation and the transition aspect of it, as it happens that many times we do so much of planning, but when we go into actually implementing it, there are lots of gotchas that happens, and at that time we need to make lots of design changes or, you know, make some more decisions. So that is the part that Pomona Valero, manager of Media Technology Services, would cover. And I would talk a bit more, come back in the assessment and the next step, what our plans are for going forward, and open it up for questions. So we will request you to hold your questions till the end, unless it is something that you really need to bring it up, please do so. But otherwise, we are hoping to have a good conversation after we give you this overview, and then we can talk a bit more about it. Of course, you can always contact us after the fact, too, if we are not able to answer your questions during this session. So please contact us. Let us work with you on any questions you may have. So talking about the background and history, as I'll go as back as 2000. In year 2000, Carnegie Mellon decided to have some level of consistency in all the enrollment control classrooms. So as probably in your institution, we have two type of classrooms, departmental control classrooms and enrollment control classrooms. So in the enrollment control classrooms, we decided to have fixed projection in all the rooms and supplement those fixed projection with technologies as requested by the faculty. So that was the approach that we took. We did define our classrooms in two tiers, tier one and tier two. So tier one was the large auditorium-style classrooms where there are seating is above 80, and the tier two was under 50, 40 type of classrooms, more mid-sized ones. So for tier one classrooms, the large classrooms, we did selectively install, made some of the rooms to be more smart classrooms. That was the word that was being used at that time, and installed a lot more technology in there. These were vendor-supported classrooms. We did send RFP out, and vendor selected the vendor, and vendor came and installed the technology and took care of the support as well. That is not the approach we took later on that you will hear with this project, but that was year 2000. We did supplement lots of other technologies in the classrooms. Faculty were requesting different technologies, and those were being delivered in the classrooms. About 8 staff members were in the group that were doing lots of this work, specifically the delivery of these technologies. So fast forward quickly over to year 2000. We, the request for deliveries of technology in the classrooms were going up and up, and we just did not have enough staff to actually go and deliver, and the satisfaction among faculty members was mixed. Sometimes the delivery wasn't happening on time, and since you know, you all know that there is a very thin window in between the classes where you had the technologist had to go and install the technology, make it work before the next class starts. So there was this interruption that was happening, wasn't making faculty very happy about it. And that's not to say that just the sheer manpower that was going into just do the deliveries and install that. So what we used, one tool that I wanted to share with you that could be useful for you, was activity-based costing. This was a very powerful tool for us to actually look at the services that we are providing, and activities actually translate into services, and how much time are we spending on each activity. So this was, over a period of summer, we did in-depth analysis of, asked staff members to fill out, time card type of thing, map the time, how much time is being spent on different activities and services. So that tool was just really great, because it is easy for us to, for all of us to really estimate the capital resources. We can see where the capital resources are going, and we can actually, account for it. But the indirect cost of manpower, where it is going, is not as easy to estimate. So this tool allowed us to give us, some kind of estimation where the staff time is going and on what type of services. And we used that information quite successfully in making a strong case for this project that you will be hearing about. So I know this is a very tedious, detailed spreadsheet. Idea was not to share the data with you, more to show you this is the kind of work that we did where in this activity-based costing, where we were able to actually come up with this number, how much are we spending in delivering a piece of technology in the classroom. So for example, it's $80 is what we estimated, it's what we are spending in delivering something. Could be a VCR or could be a tape recorder. So that was a very useful information for us. We were able to estimate how much resources are going into installing each classrooms or all the classrooms, enrollment control classrooms or other ones. So I won't dig into that. It was just to give you a snapshot of the effort that went into it, and we did gain a lot of insight from that study that we did. Faculty Advisory Committee, this is 2004, where we had a faculty advisory committee to advise us on what technologies should go into the classrooms. We had Eberle Teaching Center for Excellence involved in that process. That is our teaching center at Carnegie Mellon. So it was a collective group. Committee was quite balanced, has representation from different schools on campus, and met four times. And lots of discussions we had during that process with the faculty committee. We developed lots of data for them to look at on different things. And discussion was about, should there be a resident computer in tier in all the classroom, or shouldn't be? Should we just keep the computer for high end? So there was really, really good discussions that took place during that time. So to sum it up, we had the committee's recommendation was to upgrade all the classrooms with consistent technology and up-to-date technology and user interface. So in some of the rooms, we had slide projectors. In other ones, we had laser discs. Based on, and that's where we were scheduling the faculty. Some of you may be doing those things where if someone needed a slide projector, we will schedule them in those classes. So the recommendation was that to have consistent technologies in the classroom with up-to-date user interface, consistent user interface. And we added remote troubleshooting in there as well, so we are able to provide support rather quickly. And okay, so let's see. We did quickly go back and did the very higher level design work and made some strategic design decisions at that point. And one of them was we would like most of the technologies to be on IP, so the projector to be on IP, things like that, so that we are able to remotely troubleshoot those, provide support remotely for those technologies. We worked with University of Texas Austin. They had done some real good work, so there was collaboration with other schools as well, specifically with Kurt Bartleham, who is at UT Austin, was extremely helpful in helping us see through some of the higher level designs. And we were able to secure the funding for $2.2 million. And thanks to our CIO, Joel Smith, who is here in the room, and the faculty committee, that was quite useful. So this was a 3-year project. And I'm going to pass that over to my colleague, Dan McCarrier, who is Director of Networking and Production Services, to go into the design work more in detail. Thank you.
Thanks, Mina. So I was the lucky one in this. So I basically showed up. They had done all the hard work, and they said, here's $2.2 million in 3 years, go. So they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. So I'm going to take you through a little picture tour of sort of what I call the problem beforehand. And this will give you an appreciation for what we had to design going forward. So this is a typical lectern in one of our large classrooms. And you'll notice a couple characteristics. The projector is a little dark, but there's a large monitor up here that's the screen for the resident computer. There's a smaller display that is the touch panel. Actually, one comment real quick. I noticed a bunch of people taking pictures of the slides. I will make this available on the EDUCAUSE site, so no need to do that. So we have this mass of cables here, right, that includes a VGA umbilical cord, an audio cord, Cat5e cord for the campus network, and there's a power strip up there for AC power. Down here, we have the pull-out keyboard tray, but then the mouse is up on the table because there's no place for it down under the keyboard tray. There's another mass of wires down here. We're not really sure what that was for. And then down here, we have the resident computer and some other devices like DVD player and VHS player. The issue here was the accessibility of these components, right? I could pull this computer right out of the lectern and disconnect all the cables if I wanted to. Some of these devices were actually rack-mounted, but you can kind of get behind it and pull out the cables if you wanted to. So this led to some serious reliability problems in our rooms. So here's yet another classroom, again, similar size, but you'll notice that the presentation is a bit different, right? So instead of a lectern, right, we have a desk. Pretty much similar components, all the monitors and touch panels and everything are the same. But we've also tacked on some technology in this room. So somewhere along the line, we decided that document cameras were a good teaching tool. So the approach was to put it on a cart and wheel it next to the technology that we already had. So we have all the same problems with wires hanging around, and you could probably just pick up the document camera and walk away with it if you wanted to. Yet another room where you see where the multiple cart problem starts to pile up, right? So we have the original lectern, we have the document camera cart, and some people still used overhead, so there's yet another cart. You can quickly see how this is not a conducive environment for teaching, right? You know, you're walking into this and you maybe have 2 minutes and you want to get your laptop plugged in and you're presented with this. So, not effective. This is an example in another room of what I like to call the mystery technology problem, right? We have this box here on the wall with lots of antenna and wires sticking out of it, and nobody quite knew what it was for. So part of the project was to go and identify things like that and pull them out, again, reducing the complexity of what we were doing. And this is an example of the traveling technology problem. So if you happen to be in one of the rooms where, you know, you use the overhead projector, but the other 9 people that taught in that room didn't, quite often you'd have to go on a scavenger hunt and find it in the back of the room because, you know, nobody else had used it recently. So all of this led to development of requirements for this project. And these might all seem fairly straightforward, but they sort of fall into the category of easier said than done. So obviously consistency was important, right? We wanted to deliver the same technology in the same form factor with the same user interface in every room. Reliability was important. Obviously you want things to work when people go in, but there were also components we looked at in terms of how easy was it for our staff to go in and troubleshoot problems, or if there was a problem they couldn't troubleshoot on site, how could they replace the technology quickly and get the class back up and running? Aesthetics were important, right? You know, you saw the carts kind of piled up next to each other before. We wanted to present this technology in a package that was easily accessible and attractive for faculty to use. Support for next generation technologies. We knew that there were some things that were going to come in the future that we couldn't anticipate, but we also knew that there were some things that are here today that we wouldn't be able to roll into this project just for budgetary reasons, but we wanted to build the infrastructure to support those. Obviously, ADA compliance is always a concern. And this wasn't a requirement so much, but we had to, in designing this, we had to be guided by the principle that we had 79 classrooms that we had to crank out in 3 years. So obviously, our design had to facilitate that. And all of our work was completed during summer breaks and the month-long winter break that we had. So just an example of one of the reliability problems we had, as I pointed out earlier, we'd have students come into our rooms, and because of the state of things and with cables easily accessible, they would come in and maybe want to have an Xbox party, right, in a classroom and get everything up on the big screen. Not necessarily the best use of bulb hours on a projector, but, you know, again, it's nothing malicious they were doing. But they'd come in and they'd unplug something and they'd plug in their Xbox and not plug it in when they were done. So that would lead to a potential failure the next morning. So the next thing we did was look at our sort of classroom tier taxonomy, and Mina mentioned this earlier. We had actually envisioned adding another tier, which was sort of the smaller seminar rooms, and calling that a tier 3 room. But as we went through the project and the design, we realized that the technologies between tier 2, our smaller and medium rooms, were going to be similar to tier 3, so we just decided to keep it as is. So then we came up with a list of common technologies we wanted to put in every room. So we have a list here. What I wanted to point out is some of the pre-wiring we did for, again, certain technologies that we knew we might want to support in the future, but we might not be able to install it because of budgetary issues with this project. So for example, in every room, we have pre-wired two or three locations for video cameras. And we envision this as something that could support automated classroom capture in the future. So that's been a big topic over the past couple of years. And obviously, you need audio and video standalone technology in a room to support that. video conferencing, right? Carnegie Mellon is increasingly pursuing an international strategy, so we have video conferencing classes with sites around the world. We wanted to be able to facilitate that in classrooms. And also just support, right? You know, if you have a video camera in a room, you can potentially zoom in on the lectern and see what buttons the faculty member is pushing, or if, you know, something obviously is disconnected, that sort of thing. So again, the video cameras and video conferencing equipment are expensive, so we took the route of pre-wiring and anticipating those rather than fully installing them in all of our rooms. So after the common technologies, we looked at sort of tier-specific technologies. So in Tier 1 rooms, we had dual projection screens in every room. This is where we decided to put resident computers, large display, obviously, because you need a monitor as well as a touch panel for control. These are the rooms where we added room lighting control. So in many rooms, it's not convenient to go find where the light switch is on the wall because it could be up at, you know, at the top of the room or somewhere far away. And also wireless microphone receivers because, again, in a large lecture hall, that's most often where you're going to need to project your voice. In the smaller rooms, we decided on single projection, and having that projection off-center was important because our typical small room has chalkboards across the front, and you, by offsetting the screen, you could project and use the chalkboard at the same time. No resident computer, so if you wanted to do anything with computing in these rooms, a laptop's required. This enabled us to have a smaller, about 7-inch touch screen just for control. No room lighting control because, again, these are smaller rooms and the light switch is usually nearby. But we still kept the capability to have wireless microphone receivers. So if a faculty member had laryngitis for 2 weeks or something, even in a smaller room and needed some audio support, we could roll that in. So here's what we came up as the solution for this. Now, you can argue whether you like the design aesthetic or not, but it very much fit with the industrial kind of look we have in many of our rooms. We could have just as easily made this have nice wood grain and all of that sort of thing. But a couple things to point out. So in this lectern that we've developed, we have the back door here, which I'll show you open in a few minutes. This allows easy access to all the components and all the wiring for our technicians, but stays locked during the course of the normal day. You also see this sort of metal plate back here. This is an example of one of the things we did to sort of hide the connections and make them inaccessible to folks so they don't come in and start unplugging things. It also acts as a security device, too, so you can't actually physically pick up the document camera and walk away with it. This is the front view of the document camera, the lectern. You'll notice the large display screen for the resident computer that doubles as the touch panel for room control. It's a little hard to see, but there's a grommet on the desktop here where the VGA cable comes out, and that's the only cable that's accessible on this lectern. Document camera on a side shelf here. And again, we have another door down here where some technology that people don't need to touch is locked away. But then we also have this front plate here that I'll show you a close-up of later, and this is where all the accessible technology that people need to touch is located. We also have the umbilical cord, as we call it, from the lectern to this box. And basically what we had is all the wiring in the room, we had it converge to one box in the front of the room. And I'll show you how that lent itself to some reliability improvements in a minute. So this is just another picture of it with the keyboard tray pulled out. So this is how we solved the keyboard problems. We had a one rack unit keyboard drawer that pulls out. It has a trackpad built in, so there's not really a mouse necessary unless you want to bring one and hook it up. So this is the close-up of the user-accessible technology. So again, we have a keyboard drawer up here. Down at the bottom here, this is the resident computer. There's a Mac Mini behind that panel. But you see, all that we made accessible was the CD and the DVD drive. So again, they can't come in and unplug things. They can't turn it off. Basically, just stick a CD or a DVD in and get it out, and that's it. Also, resident DVD player. And then this was one of our innovations up here. We custom designed a panel for auxiliary input. So this is how we solved the problem both of using legacy technologies and what I call the Xbox problem, right? So if a student wanted to come and have an Xbox party, they just plug it into the ports here and use it, and they're done, right? No harm, nothing's disconnected. Similarly, you might have noticed on the common technologies list earlier, VCRs were not on the list, right? Which was obviously a very controversial thing, but by having this auxiliary input panel, we were able to lend out VCRs to folks that still wanted to use them so they could bring them in and plug them in. So what we have on this panel is component inputs. There's an S-video input right here that's hard to see. Left and right audio, a port for an additional microphone. There's also an additional VGA port. So we actually have some disciplines where people want to use the resident computer and maybe a laptop that they brought in side by side to display multiple images to students. So this was big in art history and architecture and those sorts of areas. This is an interface to the classroom response system. We kind of had some fits and starts about which product to use there. We did some early testing with some, and Pomona will talk about that in her section. A little hard to see, but this is the USB port that's an interface for the resident computer. So this is where you plug in your USB drive with files, or if you wanted to use a separate mouse, you could use it here. Campus network connection and two AC power connections right here. So this is a look at the back of the lectern with the door open. So again, this is where technicians have access to tweak wires if they need to. They have easy access to all the components, but this complexity stays away from the user, stays locked up. And again, this is the box where all of the wiring converges in the room. This is a view of the box open. And you'll notice another custom design panel where we had all of the wiring that came from various places in the room hooked up. So there are labels here for, you know, left projector and camera front and left projector. It's a little hard to see. Then we have power for the entire lectern here, conditioned power, and also all of our data connections, all in this box, again, locked up, inaccessible, so people can't touch it. From a reliability perspective, the other thing to note is, let's say we have a failure in a classroom where a technician can't come in and diagnose a software problem quickly or, you know, swap out a component real quickly. If they wanted to, they can take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 connections, disconnect them, roll the entire lectern out and roll a new one in, plug those same 5 connections back in, and the class is up and running, and then they can then take the faulty lectern off site and diagnose it further. So again, this led to some significant reliability improvements. This is just a picture of our smaller lectern. So this is what we wound up developing for the Tier 2 classrooms. The one I was showing you earlier is affectionately known as the SUV in some circles. So we wanted to, for our smaller classrooms, develop a lighter weight version with all the same technologies, more or less, except, you know, catering to the Tier 2 specific technologies. So what you see in this one is no resident computer, so all you have is a small touch screen for control down on a little ledge in the front. Same document camera and technology and auxiliary input panel in the front. We have a flip-up shelf where you can put a laptop if you want to use one. And all in all, it's a lighter weight cart, easier for faculty to move around, and we've gotten some good feedback on that. So this is an example I wanted to show of the user interface that we developed. We're lucky at Carnegie Mellon that we have a lot of world-class computer science research going on. One of those programs is actually a program in human-computer interaction. So as part of this, we were very lucky to have a class take on as a project for a semester the development of this interface for our classrooms. So what they came up with, this is the example of the smaller interface for Tier 2 rooms. Basically 4 different sections. One up here in the upper left where there's always projector and screen controls. Down in the lower left, you always had a selection of devices to display. In the main area over here is a contextual area. So depending on the device you have selected, you have controls that are contextual for that device. So there's not much to display for a laptop, but if you had selected DVD, there would be play and pause and those sorts of controls here. And then down at the bottom, we had the environmental type controls that you always want to have accessible regardless of the source, like volume. And then up at the top, we always have a mechanism to quit the system, and this 6 here is actually a question mark in real life. And that's your entry to the help system. This is an example of the larger interface for the Tier 1 room. So obviously there's more technology in a Tier 1 room and the interface needs to be a little more complex, but you see they carried forward a lot of the same concepts. So you have all of the projector controls still, all of the device selections over here, the same area for contextual controls. We added a box for previews on here. So obviously in a large lecture hall with 2 screens behind you, it's convenient to be able to see what's projecting behind you at a glance. And we added on a little bit to the environmental controls. So again, here are their buttons down here to set scenes for lighting in a large lecture hall. And the way we solve the dual projection problem is you'll see there are tabs up here, right? So left projector, right projector. The content is identical, but you can switch between the two to pick a different device to display on the left projector versus the right, or blank the right screen and leave the left screen on, that sort of thing. So in closing, I just wanted to talk briefly about some of the documentation we developed as part of this. So in the beginning, we put together what I called a marketing document that basically went over a lot of the things I've just described in terms of the elements of the design, the technologies we were putting in the rooms, how we were classifying the rooms. And this became a handy tool for a number of different audiences, right? Working with our campus design folks to help them understand what we were doing, going in to tell a faculty member that they're not going to have their VCRs anymore. This document was used as kind of a baseline to help them understand the project in general and why we weren't able to support legacy technologies anymore, that sort of thing. We came up with a wiring standards document. This was a more contractor-focused document that basically said, in a tier two room, right, we need quantity two of this type of wire running from here to here in every location. So there was no confusion over what kind of wiring and where it needed to go in any of our rooms. We also had a parts list. So you saw all of the components in a lectern. I have a list of every model of document camera and Crestron component and various things that went in there. This facilitated a development of an RFQ. So every time a winter break or a summer break came up, we, about 4 months before that, we developed an RFQ, sent it out to our vendors to try to get the best pricing on all of this, and having a coherent parts list really helped with that. In terms of end user documentation, we developed a web-based training manual and also some videos, right? So especially with some of the newer technologies that we hadn't deployed widely, like document cameras, we came up with videos that showed how to interact with the controls, how to zoom in, how to use, what media you could use, and you can still use your overheads on document cameras, just those sorts of training materials. I showed you a little bit. I didn't have any screenshots, but there's a question mark button on the touch panel that gets you into a help system that describes all the functionality. And more recently, Pomona's group has developed a printed manual that actually lives in a pocket in the lectern. So if the help system in the touch panel isn't comprehensive enough, there's some step-by-step guides in there that'll help folks. By the way, I'm happy to make any of this documentation available to folks. Our email addresses are at the end, so there's nothing top secret in any of these. So if you're interested in any of this, feel free to email me, and I'm happy to pass it along. So I'm going to hand it on to Pomona now, who will talk more about our experiences during the implementation process.
Thank you, Dan. Is this on? All right. So implementation, this is when we get to actually put the design into play. That's my daughter. This was last year. She's helping putting together a lectern. If you were at City Walk last night and you saw a 3.5-foot white cat, that was her also. Now, in implementation, some of the challenges and some of the tricks that we had to do were with respect to scheduling. Also, in in-house versus outsourcing, we had a lot of benefits in doing it in-house. And one of the biggest benefits that we had was in being able to do a lot of dynamic adjustments, mostly based on the faculty feedback that we received on a fairly ad hoc basis and the lessons we learned in implementation. So these are the topics that I'll be covering. Scheduling. Carnegie Mellon plays host to a variety of summer programs, pre-college, regular summer school, and conferences. It does make it a bit of a challenge to try and find time to take down one-third of the classrooms in order to upgrade them. By being able to take some of those out and do them over winter break, that was a very, very big advantage for us. It eased the tension for doing it over the summer. Furniture. Some of our furniture that we ordered took as long as 12 weeks to come in. So that had to take a lot of advanced planning to make sure the arrival of everything was timed just right. Staging and actually space. Now assembling it. whether we went in-house or outsourced, the staging in space would still be the same issue there. Right now, this is our own space. This is our own office where we take orders. And we're able to do the winter upgrades there. So we're actually doing about 5 lecterns at this point. This is a little dark, I apologize, but this is what it looks like in the summer when we're upgrading, when we're putting together 19 lecterns. It's a very, very tight space. There is somebody squeezing in between, tending to every single lectern and treating it like an assembly line. So to in-house versus outsourcing, the benefits in the flexibility and advantages. I'm sorry. I'll just use that one. All right. So by going in-house, is this better? We have control over design, where we can tweak it and improve upon it as we see how faculty are using it. Technician expertise, because our own technicians are the ones who put it together, it contributes towards the sustainability and the supportability of the technology and the equipment in the classrooms. Adjust for technology improvements. You have a 3-year project. Technology is going to change, products will be discontinued, models will be, you have to adjust for that. The biggest advantage, it's cost effective to make these adjustments when you do it in-house. No change orders and no costs and no contractors to deal with last minute changes. This is an example of one of the changes that we had to deal with in technology. We went with a different projector midway. We found a new projector came out where it was easier to maintain, easier to change the lamps without removing it from the ceiling mount. So dynamic adjustments, I broke it down between hardware and usability. Some of the adjustments that we made hardware-wise, in the original plan there were 3 tiers of standards. We were able to take it down to 2 tiers. The third tier is the actual smaller lectern that we wound up using as a second tier. The functionality requirements, the standards of the functionality requirements were the same. The only difference between the original tier 2 and the tier 3 was the size of the lectern. As we released the first small lectern out, faculty were very, very in favor of going with a smaller, more mobile, easier to maneuver lectern. Classroom response system. If you remember, this project started in 2006. Back in 2006, the majority of classroom response systems were infrared. So for those of you that have already had some experience with classroom response, you know what that was like. Then in 2007, technology and the vendors started to jockey. Some started merging. Some put themselves up for sale. And what we wound up doing was, after the first phase of installs, we put a moratorium on the classroom response that we had already installed while we investigate which standard we want to go with for the campus. I've heard from faculty that they only want to switch once. Don't make us switch to another classroom response system again. So make sure you pick the right one. And aesthetics. We're able to make adjustments for particular classrooms for aesthetics. Our steel gray is on the left, and on our right, we were able to request a lectern to be all black. Some of our classrooms are used for formal gatherings where it suits the decor and the furniture of that room much better than our steel gray would. The usability changes that we're able to do when we do it in-house. Simultaneous component use was a request by faculty. They wanted to be able to use a document camera and play a CD at the same time. The inputs and outputs were all there. We just had to make adjustments to the user interface. Sound and heat from the lectern. So if you remember the photograph, some of the photographs Dan showed earlier, there's a lot of technology packed into a lectern. A lot of processors, a lot of fans, generates a lot of sound. So our first attempt to contain that, we put baffles on both sides of the lecterns. That's great. You start using it, heat came out of the keyboard drawer. And it was actually so hot, faculty couldn't type. So we were able to make it... So we were able to make an adjustment there. We took the baffle down on one, and it's been working well enough that we're not seeing overheating problems. We don't have sound problems. The laptop VGA cable location. So Dan mentioned that there's a grommet on top of the lectern for your laptop, for a cable for your laptop. On our first design of the small lecterns, the grommet was on the other side of where your laptop goes. As I was watching faculty teach, I noticed, hey, wait a minute, they have to run the cable across the lectern to attach it to their laptop. So we were able to, for the next batch of orders, move that grommet to the other side. Another interesting example of a dynamic adjustment we made. Now imagine this, 79 classrooms, and we had one classroom where there is no consensus for layout. Do we make it deep and narrow, or wide and shallow? So we piloted a rotating ceiling-mounted projector. This is a snapshot of the screen that's on the touch panel. And what I'm not able to show you right here is that it actually animates and shows the professor that it does rotate. That's been kind of an interesting concept. You're used to this thing. It doesn't move. What do you mean I can move it? So we've been getting an interesting response. But then there was just no consensus which way to set that room up for. So how did we do it? Well, this is the staff that we had for implementation. One implementation coordinator to oversee everything, a Crestron programmer. We do have one who is actually certified. He just received the certification in December. 3.5 AV technicians and one work-study student. We use the work-study mostly during the summers, though. So here's the breakdown. Layout design. That's figuring out where we're going to place the lectern, the box, the speakers, and which direction things will be, where it will be, where the screen will be in relationship to the whiteboard. Cable assembly. That's the umbilical. That had to be custom because it was different from room to room. That took a while. Staging the work. You saw some of those photographs of how we had to stage that. And as inventory came in, we had to also designate which part of the stage that inventory had belonged to. Inventory, programming, and installation and testing, I think that's pretty straightforward. So our lessons learned. Opportunities, take advantage, even of the small ones. Looking for space, where are we going to stick a lot of these things that as they're arriving so we could put it together? We'd sometimes get these really small rooms. We went ahead and took them. Make some. Sometimes you can find spaces from folks like the dining services, places you hadn't thought of before. Product gotchas. As audio-video technology evolves, it becomes more IT-based. You're dealing with processors and you're dealing with software. Some projectors require a software firmware update, and some equipment require additional software licensing upgrades in order to get that functionality or feature that you're looking for. Staging the location, if possible, stage in the same building. Sometimes it wasn't possible. We staged in our own place, in our own office. But there are times where you just can't predict when all the elevators will be down for 2 days. And now how are you going to get these 200-pound beasts into the classrooms? Retiring technologies, that's been a lot of fun. What's really worked well was collaborating with departments and getting their support and getting them to help with that transitional support. Faculty that still have their material on the older technology, we will give them some of the old equipment so that they can still use it in the classroom, but we provide no support. The department is now providing that support for that technology. So those are our highlighted lessons learned there, and I will now hand it over to Mina.
Thank you, Pomona. Okay, so we have about 6 minutes left, and I'm going to cut this part very short and open it up for questions, if that's okay with you. Yes.
What's the cost of enrolling, and how do you comply with ABA in terms of wheelchair access for instructors and
So let me, over here, let me just quickly wrap up. We have completed this project that you just heard and working on the next steps on how to make it better going forward. So the question over here is, how much did the lectern cost and what were the ADA compliance issues that we encountered, right?
Mm-hmm. So let me actually go back. Let me go back to some of the design slides. In terms of the cost question, are you talking about the just the lectern furniture itself or all of the equipment? The furniture itself, those were all custom designed. They ran between $1,500 and $2,500 a pop for, $1,500 was for the smaller ones, $2,500. So some important elements here just in terms of accessibility. Again, this front panel. Sure. The question is, what's the sort of total price out the door for each of these? Tier 2 was somewhere around $30,000. Tier 1 was somewhere around $50,000. In terms of going back to the ADA accessibility question, I mean, some important components, again, having this, having the user accessible technology on a plate up front, so actually somebody in a wheelchair can wheel up and plug into any of these things. The keyboard is a bit of a challenge, we noticed, but everything else is accessible from a front panel. On the top of the lectern, the location of the monitor, you can actually come up alongside of it and pull the monitor down, and this arm is flexible enough so you can move the screen down in an area like that. Also, the location of the grommet where the laptop is. Typically, you don't want things deep on a tabletop where people have to reach up to get it, so we move that close to the front. And also, it's a little hard to see in this shot, but the document camera is actually on a shelf. The lectern itself is 42 inches high. The document camera is on a shelf that's 36 inches, so it's a little lower as to make it more accessible. So those were some of the considerations that we put into this. I mean, obviously, it's not all perfect, but we did try to keep some of this in mind.
I noticed you used a press card.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you customize your user interface and not use what they
provide? The question was, we noticed we used Crestron, and why did we customize the UI rather than use what they provide? What Crestron tends to provide is modules for, they have different modules for different types of devices. They don't actually usually ship you a comprehensive UI, you know, that can integrate all of the different technologies we put in together. So we would have had to develop something, and we were in a good position where we had this HCI class to help us do this.
I think we will take another question. Now, how about we take it offline because we can. We did use the.
Okay,
go ahead. Yes, we
the
do
question,
have.
The question was, did we have our own Crestron programmer on staff? And yes.
Yes, we do. We did train one of our technicians to get certified, and so it was homegrown. We did train someone. Question over there.
So two questions. One was students versus staff in terms of technicians. Most of the technician work was staff, though, especially in the summer, we did have student help, and we were able to hire some talented students that were able to help us in the assembly line fashion of assembling the lecterns. The other question was the 30K and 50K numbers for small and large classrooms, respectively. That is all-inclusive, including the contractor to do all the wiring in the room. That's an estimate, right? Obviously, every room is a little different in terms of the contractor wiring, but that's pretty close. Yes, it included building all the box in the wall, doing all the wiring in the room, and every, mounting and hanging the screens and all that sort of stuff. Right. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.